listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location on Division Street in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is
Ry, the movie guy. And this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, we open up the DVD players, put in the disc, and spin our top five favorite DVDs of all time.
You know, in 5 years, that sentence is going to sound so dated, and it might even be 3 years. You might as well have just said we're going to open up the VHS collection and spin some laser discs.
No. I don't see it going away that fast. There are collectors out there and people that are going to still want physical media, even though I know you're all into your streaming, Matt.
This is definitely going to be a topic for discussion.
Yeah, and the reason we're bringing it up is twofold. One, we're in the holiday season. It's a great time to discuss DVDs because still, Matt, DVDs are a great present to give people who love movies in your family. You know, it's a great gift.
No, I agree. Yeah, it's still a really good gift. An iTunes gift card would be just as good.
But... All right, so we got that reason, and also, because we have a guest that's going to be joining us in a little bit, Matt Streets, who has this unbelievable goal, and it's a great goal, of watching all Criterion films and reviewing all of them on the site Keeping It Real.
Yeah, our friends...
David J. Fowley.
Yeah, Keeping It Real.
Yeah, Matt Streets is his name. He also calls himself the Criterion Completist. I love it.
I was just going to say that. Yep, that is it's a cool handle. Cool moniker.
Sure is. So he's going to be in here, and he is an expert on DVDs, DVD sets, and that good stuff. In addition to that, we have reviews for you of Killing Them Softly.
Saw it. Yep. Great.
It's good. Can't wait to hear your opinion on that. Hyde Park on Hudson, the new Bill Murray film, and also Life of Pi, the Ang Lee 3D.
I'm actually really excited to hear your review on that because I haven't seen it yet, so I think I'm going this weekend.
Awesome. In addition to that, we go eye for an eye on The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, not to mention a DVD review, as we talk about DVDs, of Brave is out on DVD, and I know you saw that in the theater.
I did. Okay, cool.
Yeah, plus trivia, yourself against Matt Streets in Lord of the Rings actors movie trivia.
Okay. I don't know how I feel about this one. We'll see.
Yes. So we are jam-packed, as always, Matt. It's a full show. And it's going to be a fun show. So we bring in our guest, Matt Streets. He calls himself the Criterion Completist. Welcome to Cinema Jaw.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Now, we have a common friend in David Fowley who writes and sort of came up with keepingitreal.com, and we love the guy.
Yeah,
and
he's great.
And you write on that site, correct?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do the Criterion Completist columns for his site. He reviews like the modern stuff, and I review the Criterion DVDs.
So I guess that begs the first question to be, when did you come up with the idea of tackling the Criterion collection and reviewing all the films?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You guys just mentioned like the streaming and stuff. I had earlier on my Xbox gotten Hulu Plus, and they have they've got hundreds of Criterion movies on there. And I was sitting there scrolling through all these amazing films, like, you know, famous ones like Seventh Seal and Eight and a Half, like the classics, and then all these obscure films I'd never heard of. And I just couldn't believe how many there were. And then I went on Criterion's website and I saw like their official list. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool if someone saw every single one of these? And I mean, I'm a huge movie fan. I'm a huge movie nerd. And I just thought, you know, these are the movies I should be seeing. These are the movies that, you know, I should have under my belt, all these famous Bergman films and Fellini films and, you know, the classics of international cinema. And I thought, I came up with this idea, and I knew David, and I knew he had his site, so I just pitched the idea to him.
That is great. And, you know, I read the intro, I guess it would be called, on Keeping It Real, of when you were going to come on to do.
Yeah.
And he was basically introducing you to his fans, and then you had a little bit right up on there, and you mentioned Fellini's Eight and a Half, and you said something along the lines of, it's almost embarrassing that I can quote Ghostbusters from start to finish, but I've never seen Fellini's Eight and a Half.
Exactly.
And I'm right there with you. You know, I know all these goofy movies that we grew up loving.
I'm even more there with you, dude, because I think Ryan has a lot higher taste than I do, higher brow, but I'm Ghostbusters,
but
that's
sometimes
my speed.
I'm embarrassed that I haven't seen some of these classic films.
Sure. And the thing is, there's nothing wrong with Ghostbusters. I love Ghostbusters. I love Goonies. I love Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know, the movies like that are fantastic, and they have their place. But I felt, you know, not a little guilty almost that I didn't have some of these more classic, like, eternal films under my belt. And that was kind of half the reason for doing this. So.
Do they satisfy you? I mean, like, when you watch them, are you like, oh my God, it's like a chore? Or for the most part?
It's funny you should say that. Like, an old friend of mine used to say, I hate great books that suck. And it's kind of, it's like that way with movies sometimes. You hear about this movie that's supposedly amazing and you're like, man, that was a slog, like 2.5 hours of, you know, weeping clowns or whatever. And, but then you're also like, you get surprised every now and then.
Well, I love the feeling, cause I have that same feeling, not just with Criterion films, but classics.
Yeah.
You hear about it, you hear about it. But when they live up to the hype, it's something special when you
sure
see
is.
A movie that's 70 years old, everybody's been telling you about it, and you finally tackle it, and yeah. it lives up to the hype. That's
oh,
pretty special.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And then, and even better is when you find those hidden gems, those things you've just never heard of before, like Tunes of Glory, this like 1950s British war film with Alec Guinness. It's like these two...
Really?
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's like these two kind of older military guys at this like castle in Scotland, and like there's like power control. It's almost like a David Mamet film. It's like heavy on the dialogue, you know. Never heard of it, you know, just like it never would even occur to me. And then, you know, you come across this movie and you watch it and it just blows your mind. And, you know, that's half the fun too.
So keeping yourself to the standard of Criterion Completist has expanded your horizons and gotten you to see films you probably wouldn't have watched otherwise.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I've always been a fan of like indie films and foreign films and things like that. So, I mean, I have some knowledge of them. But, yeah, it's definitely, like, expanded, you know, my horizons, like, trying to do this. It's daunting. I mean, I think in my intro I calculated that if I kept it up and tried to do at least one a week, it would still take me almost 25 years, you know, to watch them all. And they keep releasing more and more. So it's like, it's...
You're never going
to
get there.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll ever get there. And, you know, that's a good problem to have. You know, it's never a bad problem to have too many great movies to watch. So
right. And speaking of... because they always do pick what they would consider great movies. They have a standard of film, I guess, that... Do you know how they go about picking that up?
And
even take us way back to the beginning, how the Criterion brand got started, if you could, from your knowledge.
From my knowledge, and I'm not a complete expert on this, is that there used to be this company called Janus Films that would get the rights for all these foreign films, bring them and show them in the United States. Like, they were the ones who brought over all like the French New Wave films that were, you know, hugely popular in Europe, and then, you know, came over. Like,
name Janus sounds familiar, though. Are they still around? Or?
You know, you'll see them like when you see the opening credits of a movie.
Sure,
you'll see like the symbol. It's like I think it's like a Roman gladiator symbol, and it'll say Janus Films on it. But they were the ones that, you know, would show like these like Jean-Luc Godard films, you know, in New York, like in the 60s, and get people like aware and like open their minds like to these, you know, to all these great films. And I think somewhere along the line they ran into some money problems, and they either changed into Criterion, or Criterion came along and bought the rights to all those films. And so now they own the rights to them, and they're the ones that are re-releasing and reprinting them. They did some of them on Laserdisc in the 80s. And then when DVD came, that was like when they really kind of came into their own, you know, these like opulent kind of box sets with like director's commentary and what they're known for, like the tons of extras and digging up like the lost print of like Brazil and having like a Brazil box set with like four different versions of the film and Terry Gilliam like talking endlessly about each one. And,
right.
And have you watched that?
I have it, and I've seen, I think I've seen all the versions of it, but it's a lot to take in, you know.
Yeah.
And I love Brazil. It's a great movie, but it's kind of a heavy movie, so it's not something
it's
like...
It's pretty heavy.
Yeah, like when you're done with it, you don't exactly want to throw it on again and see like the director's cut or like the international version or whatever. But it's fantastic, and it's kind of like you're glad that someone is out there kind of guarding the gates for these great movies and, you know, doing the legwork to find all these, you know, amazing films and all the special features and deleted scenes and rare footage, like behind the scenes footage and stuff. As far as like the quality, there are a couple questionable ones, like
mm-hmm.
Armageddon, for instance.
Ooh, that slipped
movie.
In there.
Yeah, yeah.
What?
And you're like, that's like one of my least favorite movies of all time. I freaking hate that movie.
Yeah, that,
and it's
that's
like,
crazy.
Yeah, it's really weird, you know, and you're like, why is Armageddon a Criterion film, you know, like Michael Bay and all this? But like, but then there's other ones like...
He probably just paid him.
Yeah, you know, and it's like some people, like you'll go online, like on their website, and there's like these message boards, and some people talk like, oh, well, Michael Bay just paid, you know, or the film company paid. And it's hard to tell like what their process is sometimes in choosing movies. That's what they do. I mean, they've got some other ones. They've got like RoboCop is like a Criterion.
Now that I agree
mm-hmm.
with.
No, yeah, completely. You know, Paul Verhoeven is fantastic. So.
And you know, I was going to ask as far as these special features, because I think the special features, Matt, as we've pointed out in Jaws previous, is very big into the streaming, and he keeps telling me that physical media is dead. But I really think that the special features on discs, the special packaging, the Lawrence of Arabia that we we'll undoubtedly talk about.
Yeah, sure.
Upcoming.
This giant box you brought.
Yeah, these awesome box sets is what's going to always keep, at least for the unforeseeable future, DVDs and Blu-rays alive going. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, totally. Yeah. For like a true kind of cinephile, like they want the physical media. They want the extras. You can stream a movie on Hulu, and that's great. And every now and then, if you go over on the Hulu menu, they'll have one or two of the special features on there, actually, which is kind of cool. They're trying
they need to
like,
do more of that.
Yeah, they definitely need to do more of that. But it won't ever touch having the physical thing and having like the menu with all the bazillion special features that they cram into these DVDs. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite special feature that's you know, like a reoccurring one, like a director's commentary? Do you like the commentaries aspect, or do you like?
You know, I'll be honest.
Alternative endings.
I'm not such a huge fan of the director's commentary. Usually, I like to watch a movie kind of on my own and unfettered. You know, if it's something I've seen maybe like a ton of times, like sometimes I'll throw in the commentary just because you want to. You know, you've seen it so many times, and it's like, all right, like let's hear some of the behind the scenes. But as far as special features go, I love deleted scenes. Alternate endings, stuff like that. Gag reels are always kind of pointless, but I'll throw them on sometimes just to see them goofing around.
Sure.
But I also like Criterion always manages to dig up like interviews with the director. You know, it's like a 30-minute interview with Werner Herzog or something, and you're just, you know, and he's just rambling on and giving you all this great information. Like, I love that stuff. I think that's great.
And,
you know?
And sometimes I've actually had a movie, actually just recently, In the Land of Blood and Honey, which Angelina Jolie directed.
Yeah, I didn't see that one.
You don't have to. It's not that great of a film, but it had to do with the Bosnian War in the 1990s. And the movie ended, I thought, oh, it was just junk. She just didn't get it right. Well, here's this extra on there with the actors who actually lived through the conflict in the 1990s, talking about what side they were on. That extra, that 40-minute extra of interviewing all the cast was more interesting and more entertaining than the entire movie. I was glad itself. It was on the disc.
That's great. Yeah, I love that stuff. It's fantastic. There was one of the Criterions I did was A Night to Remember, which is a British film about the sinking of the Titanic.
Sure.
And it's fantastic. I never even knew about it. I found it when I was going through the menus. And I think it was like I chose that movie that week because it was when they re-released Titanic this year. Mm-hmm. Was that this year? That they
in
did
3D,
the,
yes.
In 3D.
I'm trying to forget about that. Man.
Yeah, yeah. sorry, didn't mean to bring that one up. But
Ryan loves the movie. He can't stop talking about it.
You know, and
I'm a fan.
It's true. I'm not making a joke. That's the truth.
You know, Titanic has its pluses and minuses. But this, A Night to Remember, which no one remembers it, and no one seems to know about it, is amazing. It's way better than Titanic. It's much less melodramatic and focused more on like the accident itself. But one of the special features is they talk about how they made the Titanic, and it's like how they did special effects in the 1950s, and it's this fascinating like special feature. You're just like seeing these black and white photos of these guys building the Titanic on these like giant sets in this like film studio in Britain, and you never see anything like that, you know? Like the history of special effects in movies is really cool. So yeah, I love stuff like that.
Awesome.
That is pretty wild.
And how many would you say you've seen so far on your quest? Do you have a number ballpark in your
head?
Well,
I said in my intro that even if I'd seen it before, like I've seen Armageddon before, unfortunately, I will rewatch it again for the sake of, you know, the Criterion completist, you know. I'll watch Brazil again for a fresh time and review it. So including those, I've probably seen maybe close to like 100, maybe a little more. For what I've reviewed this year, I think I've reviewed only maybe like 20 or 25. But there's close to maybe 900 out there.
Wow.
If you include, they've got like an imprint called Eclipse, where they just review the disc without all the bells and whistles to kind of keep the price down on some of these like lesser known films that maybe they don't have a lot of extras for, just like a theatrical trailer or something. So if you include all of those as well, you're looking at close to 900. And they release about 5 or 6 a month, maybe. So there's constantly more coming out. So it never ends. It's just, you know, climbing this mountain and, you know, kind of like a Sisyphean task of rolling this boulder. And hopefully at some point I'll get to the end. I might have gray hair by then, but yeah.
It's a fun hobby to have.
It is. You know, it's kind of, I try to just, you know, knock out the movies one at a time and not look at like the long list that kind of, you know, ahead of me. I try to like pick interesting movies and mix it up and just kind of have fun with it.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
It's a worthy quest. And
thank you.
We wish
you
well.
Yes.
I actually, your listeners won't be able to see this, but a buddy of mine gave me
a
Criterion t-shirt.
That is awesome.
Yeah, with the C logo on it. So I wore that special just for...
They'll be able to see it in the photos. So We'll take a photo with you after. Post it on the blog.
Well done. Yeah. So Matt Streets, the Criterion completist, will be sitting in on this entire episode. He has his five favorite DVDs picked out, as do me and Matt. Get your Christmas lists ready, jawheads, because hopefully we'll pull out a few gems here.
Absolutely.
New movies opening up. We have The Hobbit. We are going eye for an eye on, and Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
MoviePass.
Yes, MoviePass, Matt. We got exciting news.
Yeah, we do. So they're finally up and running again. This has been a long time coming. This is something you might be interested in here, Matt. If you want to go to all the movies you want.
Unlimited.
In the theaters for one price. And CinemaJaw fans get the best price. Go to CinemaJaw.com. We have it right on the right. You can click the MoviePass link and get in. And in fact, it's very limited. They're an invite only.
Yes.
So CinemaJaw's got invites. Go to our website, cinemajaw.com. Click the MoviePass link. Get yourself free movies. Well,
for
unlimited.
Life?
Yearly.
It's yearly. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So you pay a yearly subscription. It's basically like Netflix, but in the theaters.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you pay a price and then you have unlimited
How much for
amount.
A year?
I believe it's 39, but it could be 29. So
per month.
Oh, per month. Okay.
Yes. All right. Yeah. So double check that. And as a matter of fact, if there's speaking of Christmas lists, if there's people on your Christmas list, there's going to be a little present logo underneath the MoviePass ad that you can click, and you can give MoviePass subscriptions to your friends and family, and you could do it monthly, quarterly, yearly, whatever you want, and there's according pricing there too. So. We thank them for their support.
Sounds great.
Awesome. The Hobbit, an unexpected journey. A curious hobbit, Bilbo Baggins, journeys to the Lonely Mountain with a vigorous group of dwarves to reclaim a treasure stolen from them by the dragon Smaug. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, Smaug.
Smaug, all right. Playing Bilbo is Martin Freeman. Meanwhile, Ian McKellen returns as Gandalf and Andy Serkis as Gollum. The film is directed by Peter Jackson and has a runtime of 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Jesus.
And is the first of three films in the so-called Hobbit trilogy. Matt, interested or ignore on The Hobbit?
Okay, I gotta say, off the cuff, interested. But I'm wary. I mean, they got Return of the King done in one film, and The Hobbit's going to be three? Whew. It's a short story compared to Return of the King. I mean, we're talking about a 100-page novel. They can get this done in one film. I don't know. But I trust Uncle Peter.
Matt, interested or ignore on The Hobbit?
Absolutely interested. How could you not be? It's probably going to be the movie of the year. I don't know if it's going to get the Oscars that the third, you know, Lord of the Rings did, but how could you not want to see this? Martin Freeman, love him. You know, all the old cast is back from the other movies. Peter Jackson, you don't really need to think too hard about this.
I have to agree with you, but as we keep getting closer to it, I'm getting less and less interested. I am going to go ahead and give it an interested, though. But as we get close, like you were saying, Matt, I don't know what they're doing three films on The Hobbit. It just seems a bit excessive at this point.
Yeah.
Like, I was so excited when I first heard the news they were going to tackle The Hobbit. Then it was going to be two films. I was still pumped. But three films just seems like too much.
It's a short story. I mean, really. He goes up the river, fights the spiders, goes to the mountain, talks to the dragon, and it's all over. That's the movie. I ruined it.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes over three films. But I'm definitely going to go see this first one. So.
Oh, for sure.
Three interesteds for The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey. And speaking of new movies, me and Matt got out and saw Killing Them Softly. Elias, roll clip R1.
This is Marky's second game. The first one got knocked off. And it was Marky who did it.
I did it! I don't know what it is with these guys. They can't keep their mouth shut about nothing.
They gotta be hit.
It goes up like a bonfire. I love it.
So who's gonna do it? You?
Any Mickey fixing.
New York Mickey?
I don't know if they'll spring for two guys.
It's a two-man job.
Fly, coach.
So what are we doing?
We got four guys.
We start with Trapman.
Let's have a beer.
You ever killed anyone? You can get touchy-feely. They cry, they plead, they beg, they call for their mothers. I like to kill them softly, from a distance.
I don't know who you are.
Very few guys do.
Get yourself quite a party.
I don't take orders from you.
You know they're gonna kill you.
I'm living in America.
America's not a country. It's just a business.
The latest collaboration between Andrew Dominik and Brad Pitt is heavy on dialogue and rich with interesting characters. Pitt plays a hitman of sorts involved in cleaning up a situation in which a mob-organized card game was stolen from. Ray Liotta plays Marky, the guy who was overseeing the card game. He is suspect number one because he had once robbed his own game in the past. James Gandolfini plays Mickey, a hired gun to help Pitt knock off the people responsible for the robbery. With this plot, you may be thinking action-packed, but what we have here is a dialogue-driven story. Most of the movie is made up of different characters talking in various locations. Each discussion leads us to guess who is outsmarting who. The story takes place in 2008 during the financial crisis. We constantly see or hear news clips from Bush and Obama about the situation. Andrew Dominik is clearly making a point of showing us the parallel between the mob situation and the thieves on Wall Street. I found that connection rather interesting, Matt. There are a couple of violent scenes, both involving Ray Liotta, and both were spectacular. The sound in particular of him getting beat up at one point stayed with me for days. The last scene as Brad Pitt drive home the message of the movie with one of the most poignant movie lines of 2012. As Axl Rose says, have some patience and enjoy this one. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, 3 Jaws, a grade of a B.
Well, I couldn't disagree more, man.
Whoa, whoa, whoa!
Yeah, this is a snooze fest all the way. I liked the violence. It was good. I thought the political undertones were ham-fisted, and they weren't undertones at all. It was like, oh, man, you are beating us over the head with this. They could have played it once and maybe again in the background without the sound, but every time they walk into a bar, C-SPAN is on. Like, seriously, where are these bars?
Every time they're in the car, I agree. It did get a little bit, hit you over the head a little bit too much, I agree. Yeah. But I like that parallel that was out there.
I dig the parallel. It was fine. I think this is kind of Brad Pitt's breaking up letter to Obama, and I might be stealing. I read that in another review, but after reading the review, I thought it made a lot of sense. He famously supported and then maybe changed his opinions, but the movie doesn't work. It's so long and dreary.
It's not that long. What are you talking about?
It feels long because
it's
nothing
only like
freaking
90
happens.
Minutes.
And James Gandolfini's completely wasted in this. I mean, when you think back to his
character.
Appearance. I
was smiling the entire time he was on screen.
No, you think back to his appearance in True Romance. He's on the screen for maybe 5 minutes at the most. I mean, it's a short cameo, and that was an amazing appearance. His appearance in this movie, it's like, oh man, I mean, like, give me another volume.
You know, I knew you weren't going to like this movie, Matt, and you know, after I saw it, because I thought, you know, Matt's one of these guys that, and I've heard people review it and give it 4 stars A, and some people are like, I just couldn't wait to walk out of the theater. It was so slow and boring, but it wasn't action-packed. It didn't have the violence of like these mob movies.
I don't need it to be action-packed.
But it was interesting just to see the character development on screen, no?
I didn't completely hate it. I really have a lot of faith in Plan B Productions, Brad Pitt's movie studio or his up-and-coming production company. So I didn't completely hate it, but there was a lot of things that did not work.
And as I mentioned, that poignant line at the end that Brad Pitt says to him about...
That was good.
Yes, about America not being a country.
I did like that.
That entire thing was great at the end.
But
it sums up the entire movie and message of the film. I walked out. I just wanted to pump my fist in the air. It felt so damn good.
Who was the boss? Who was the freaking mob boss?
It didn't matter. That's the thing, too, about like when you're thinking about the financial crisis. Like, who's in charge anymore? It doesn't even matter. It's what's in
I
it
think
for
you're
me?
Reaching.
Everybody's
you're reaching.
On their own in this country.
Well,
so.
we'll see. I mean, like, it was all right.
How many Jaws? I gave it 3 Jaws.
Yeah.
Here goes Matt. Yeah, I agree with you. 3 Jaws.
No, not 3. It's 2. It's 2.
All
it's,
right.
It's not
two
a complete
Jaws.
Waste of time, but I think, you know what, since we're talking about DVDs, you can wait for this one to come out on DVD or Netflix Instant.
All right. Also out in theaters, Hyde Park on Hudson, Matt. Bill Murray plays President FDR in 1939 during King George VI's visit to America. That's enough to pique anyone's interest. We are not used to seeing Murray portray any non-fictional characters, much less a president of the United States. He did a great job, Matt, but at times, I still wanted him to be Bill Murray on screen more than I wanted to see him try to be FDR. The story is based on true events concerning the first ever visit to America by a king and queen of England. The stammering King George VI, the same king we meet in the King's Speech, was here to gain U.S. support for World War II. FDR decided to have him out at his summer home in Hyde Park for a casual gathering. having cocktails before dinner and serving hot dogs at a picnic was just a couple of controversial choices made by the president during the visit. It might be looked at, I guess, Matt, as trying to belittle the king and queen, or actually seen in some ways a way to bring the country together. This side of the story worked for me. However, it was overshadowed by a storyline that did not. Laura Linney pops up, plays a Daisy, a distant cousin of FDR, that actually goes on to have a love affair with him. She spends many dies. Yes, yes, and love letters
FDR
later.
FDR got with his cousin?
Yes, a distant cousin, fifth cousin. She spends tons of days over at the Hyde Park house while FDR is there. She's crushed, actually, to find out that she's not the only woman he's seen outside of his wife. The film, more or less...
Was the other one related to him, too?
I don't know that. The film, more or less, though, Matt, celebrates the fact that FDR had affairs with multiple women. That just felt wrong to me. Not to mention, I thought Laura Linney's character came off like a bump on a log. They should have focused more on the king's visit and less on the love affair. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, a disappointing two Jaws, grade of a C+. I guess the revelation here is that they did find these love letters after she passed away, and now they've, you know, come to fruition that, oh, he was cheating on Eleanor Roosevelt, and, you know, it goes on to tell the story.
Should have burned those, you know?
But seeing Bill Murray play FDR is, like I say, it piques anybody's interest.
Yeah, is there any Oscar buzz around this? Is this like his year?
Going in, you know, 3-4 months ago before anyone had seen it, it was on the map.
It certainly seemed like that, right?
For sure. But after seeing it, no, it's really fizzled out.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, the performance, it's all right. It's serviceable. It's nothing that is award-worthy. So, unfortunately, Bill's going to have to wait for that Oscar.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Ghostbusters 3 will be his moment.
Yeah. Oh.
You keep pushing that one. All right. One last one is The Life of Pi. We didn't do this because we were off last week, but The Life of Pi, Ang Lee's visual masterpiece, should not be missed in theaters, Jawheads. And actually, it should be seen in 3D if available. And you know, I'm not a big 3D guy, but see this one. The story of a boy, Pi, stuck on a lifeboat with a tiger named Richard Parker, is one of faith and the power of imagination. To find out that that it was actually a CGI tiger for the most part is actually mind-blowing after seeing the movie. It sure fooled me. The journey Pi makes on the lifeboat is epic and magical. I love that the film presents the story and then lets the viewers choose what they want to believe. This is one of the year's best, Matt, and I think Ang Lee is in the driver's seat for Best Director come Oscar. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, 3.5 Jaws, a grade of a B+ for Life of Pi.
I'm happy to hear that review. Like I said, I'm going to go see it this weekend. I'm excited.
Yeah, Matt, you want to check this one out as well, huh?
Yeah, I was a little on the fence, but I've read some good reviews and hearing you talk about it there. I think I'm going to check it out, yeah.
Definitely.
Maybe a Criterion pick of the future.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, it's based off of a book, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, famous book. So, yeah, I usually like Ang Lee. I'm probably going to go see that.
Yeah, and the 3D is just spectacular. Great opening credits of the zoo animals. Everything about it, as soon as it starts, I thought... 5 minutes in, you know that feeling? I'm going to love this movie. You just know. Like, it's got something special going for it. Yeah.
Cool.
So, definitely.
Cool.
And you know what? Before we get to our five DVDs, I forgot to mention, I threw out on Twitter to the Jawheads, and it's a segment we call, Matt, Jaw 101. Describe a subject in one word. And because The Hobbit is coming out, I decided we'd pick Peter Jackson. Trying to describe Peter Jackson in one word, do you have something that springs to your head, Matt?
Imaginative.
I like it. He definitely is.
Yeah.
Is he one of your favorite directors?
He is. I loved, I used to watch all his early films, like, what's the Muppet film? Meet the Feebles.
Yeah.
And Dead Alive.
Oh my God.
Just like a crazy splatter film. And I remember seeing like The Frighteners in the theater and thought that was great. It was like kind of like a late era Michael J. Fox film. And I love Peter Jackson. I mean, he's obviously a household name now. He's a superstar director. You know, he's made billions of dollars and won Oscars and stuff. But those early films to me where they're real like chaotic and energetic, I love that stuff. That's what I always think of when I think of Peter Jackson.
Matt, you got one that pops up, a word that describes Peter Jackson?
Yeah, it's a fictional word, though. It's Singaya. It's from Dead Alive. That's the bite that you get.
Yeah.
Singaya!
Right on.
You've got the bite! And then they're going to chase you with a machete.
Well done. Sticking with the... I was going to go Middle Earth, but I guess that's two words. I was just going to go Hobbit. He actually reminds me of a Hobbit. He's sort of a hairy...
The hairy little dude.
Yeah. I imagine his feet are very hairy. He just looks like that kind of dude. And obviously ties in with the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I'd go with that word.
Yeah, I threw this out on Twitter right before we got started. Did we get any responses?
Yes, we did. As a matter of fact, Bob Devney says Jacksonian. He's going for the derivative there.
Sure, I like it.
Mark Hearn said precious.
Oh, there you go. Nice. I should have thought of that. Yep. Nice one, Mark.
Okay. Adam Tweets Best gave us a hyphenated one, but we'll give it to him. Director Savant. Yeah, I'd say that. I like it. This one's good from Donnie Rodriguez, at Donnie Rad on Twitter, says trilogy.
Yes.
There you know go. That guy, Elias?
He might be related.
Oh, yeah, good guy, good guy.
Yeah, he's good. And then Dam, at 777 Dam, says meticulous.
Which, there you go.
Yeah, I mean,
especially with the last few movies, yeah, the trilogy and everything.
The Lord of the Rings, yeah, the way he recreated Middle Earth, yeah. And did the Force perspective stuff, very meticulous. So good word, damn.
Definitely, Jawheads. If you didn't tweet us, shoot us a tweet. Let us know what word you would describe Peter Jackson with.
Yeah, thanks a lot for doing it.
Beautiful. So it brings us to our top five favorite DVDs. Matt's going to get us started this week.
Wait, which Matt? Oh, Matt boy. K or yeah, Matt
K? Why don't you get us started, Matt?
All right. This is a really tough list to do because basically, and I know we're trying to go for movies that have or DVDs that have the best like features and stuff like that. But as I said earlier, like I am not that guy. I always kind of just watch. I mean, Netflix. Hulu.
This guy actually watches movies on his iPad. Isn't that disgusting?
Disappointing.
Yes, I agree.
See, really?
Yeah.
Why?
For sure.
No, it's so comfortable. No. You just curl up in your bed.
Oh,
you know?
Terrible!
The wife's
terrible.
Watching the big screen. I can watch something else.
Almost
on the
embarrassing,
iPad.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, I agree.
And you know what? Like I know this
you
almost
guys
sounds
are snobs.
This almost sounds snooty of me. But if I'm at a friend's house and we're about to watch a movie I hadn't seen, and he doesn't have surround sound. I almost won't watch the movie. I'll just say, you know what? I got a stomach, something in my stomach. I gotta go because I need to see the movie as it was meant to be seen.
No, yeah. I could watch it on a freaking wristwatch.
Oh,
I don't care.
You know, that's terrible.
The only time, like, if I'm on an airplane or something, and there's like a big budget film that I haven't seen yet, I just won't watch it. You know, on that tiny little screen.
Right.
But I gotta say, like this summer, I did see 5 Year Engagement on an airplane, and I was okay with that.
Yeah,
something like that.
Right.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I'll watch this on an airplane. I got no problem with that.
I actually Quentin Tarantino was on Howard Stern. You know, I'm a Stern fan, and I was listening to the interview and. Robin brought up the fact that Howard ends up watching everything on his iPad. He's one
What's
of
wrong
like,
with that?
And Quentin Tarantino said, you know what? Please, for the love of God, don't watch my movies on an iPad.
Yeah, right on.
Why?
Put Why? The headphones on. What are you on? Talking about?
Oh, you guys, take it down a notch
oh,
here,
man,
all right?
That's embarrassing.
So, at number five,
oh, boy.
At number five, I have a movie that was once described to me as worth it for the boobs alone, but that is such a shallow interpretation of this masterpiece, American Beauty. But it is worth it for the boobs alone. But that's like just the tip of the iceberg because what a Titanic, and not the movie Titanic, but what an amazing pillar of a movie. I love it start to finish.
I completely agree. It's one of my like secret favorite movies, and I watch it almost like once a year. It's kind of life-affirming. When you're done with it, you're like, I'm going to be a better person. Like, I'm going to go, like, I'm going to start jogging in the morning and, you know, go donate money to a charity. Of course, you never do, but...
But it makes you want
it
to.
It makes you want to.
Yeah.
You know, and it's fantastic. I absolutely love it. Yeah.
Nice pick. Nice
Thank
pick,
you.
Matt.
Yeah. Thank you.
We throw it over to the other Matt. Matt Streets, what do you got sitting at
okay.
one, number five?
Number five, I'm just because I brought it here, I'm going to mention, and this will be my number five, is the new Lawrence of Arabia 50th anniversary limited edition box set here.
It's a
Blu-ray. Yeah, I think 3 discs, and then it's also got the soundtrack. It's got
wow.
a book. It even comes with a individually numbered piece of film in a frame here. I mean, it's one of my favorite movies of all time. And then this is just perfect for the absolute film nerd. Great Christmas gift here. You've got documentaries, Conversation with Steven Spielberg, you know, just all this stuff. There's probably even like a vial of sand from the desert where they filmed the movie, but
it's about the size, to describe it to the Jawheads, it's about the size of
like a record.
Record.
It's an LP.
It almost looks like an LP box set.
Awesome.
And it's kind of got this like postmodern like painting of Lawrence on the front.
Even the artwork on the front is just gorgeous.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
That should be displayed.
And yeah, so I'm just going to pick that as number 5. I just got it in the mail today.
And this is a movie, Lawrence of Arabia, that should be owned on Blu-ray. If there's a reason to have a Blu-ray player, it's Lawrence of Arabia.
Without a doubt, yeah. I mean, this is why we have this technology. So yeah, it's meant to be watched on Blu-ray on a nice flat screen, big TV.
I'm just reading a little
bit here. Yeah, go watch Lawrence of Arabia on your iPad, Matt.
Yeah,
this is actually in 4K.
Here
I can I was right there. Four remastered at 4K resolution.
Yeah,
wow,
that's sick.
It's going to be incredible. I mean, I can't wait to crack it open and take a look at it. Of course, if you've never seen it, you know, now's your chance.
Awesome.
It's almost 4 hours long, so give yourself a nice chunk of time, and it kind of breaks up nicely. There's a nice moment in the middle where you can. I think the intermission is actually in the film.
It is,
isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, like so you can go up and go to the bathroom and do whatever you got to do.
Yeah, I was commenting before we went on air to Matt that I have Lawrence of Arabia special edition on DVD, but it's actually on two discs. The intermission breaks it up, and then you put the second disc
sure,
in.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So good stuff. That's my number five. Yeah.
Swings it over to my number 5, and at number 5, an absolute classic, right up there with Lawrence of Arabia, in my opinion, as far as likable films. It's the 1975 masterpiece, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. It's the two-disc special edition DVD. I don't have it on Blu-ray, but this came out around 2002. It was right when it was restored on a digital transfer and the first time it was offered in 5.1 Dolby Digital Surround Sound.
Nice.
And it has an awesome behind-the-scenes documentary of the making of. And some of the fun things about going back to these older films is seeing like a Danny DeVito, Jack Nicholson getting interviewed and doing those kind of like behind-the-scenes footage when they're so young. It's
sure,
really
like
something
time
to behold.
Capsule.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. It has deleted scenes, has plenty of deleted scenes in the film, and also has commentary track by director Milos Forman and producer Michael Douglas. Douglas.
He won the Oscar for that,
he
right?
Did,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I love it. I think it's a great package, and I've listened to the commentary. It's definitely worth checking out as well.
Well, you know a great package when you see one, right?
Oh! There you go.
All right, Matt. Way to bring it back down. All right. Swings us over to our fours. What do we got?
So my number 4 is a movie I last owned on VHS, and I literally wore this tape out. This came out way before the writer, director, star of the movie became a total freaking nutbag. I'm speaking of Braveheart. Before Mel Gibson went off the deep end, we all liked this movie. Let's
sure.
just admit that right
yeah.
now. All right, and it's really hard to watch now because every time you see his face, you just want to reach through the screen and throttle him for all the stupid crap that he has done with his life. But up to this point, he was fine, and Braveheart is an amazing movie. I love it. I'll still throw it in, and I'll try to forget Mel.
Is there a nice special edition of it or something out there?
I don't know.
I still have the VHS, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't
upgrade,
know of
man.
One. I know they have like a standard Blu-ray edition that just came out, but I don't know of like a really nice box set of, that's ever been done.
You know, they're
Braveheart.
Probably coming up on like 10th anniversary, or when did that come out?
Oh, no. It's probably 15th.
95, I think.
Yeah, 94, yeah, 95, yeah. Right in there. Let's throw that in the jaw box.
Throw
Elias will get to
box.
It after the break.
Yeah.
So if you have any questions, we can't think of a fact. Elias will do the research.
Oh, excellent!
For us.
Sure, that's great.
Yeah. What do you got sitting
number,
Matt,
four,
at number 4?
We kind of already touched on this briefly. I'm just going to put all the Lord of the Rings box sets: the 1, 2, 3, the expanded edition, 4-disc box sets, where they took these already long movies and made them even longer, and they made them better somehow. Like, you know, usually when they add, you know, sometimes when they add extra scenes, you're like, oh, that was not necessary. But in this case, the extra stuff just adds even more texture and backstory to these already amazing epic films. Each movie is a 4-disc set, so chock full of extras, it would just blow your mind. I mean, I don't even think I've seen them all. Like, you can throw in these discs, and they've got menus and submenus and submenus and the submenus. You can see how they knitted the pants for the hobbits, you know, and all this stuff. It's just incredible. So I'm just like, all 3 of those, you should just get them all. If you're a fan of the movies, they're all completely worth getting. And you can, like, they've come down in price now.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, and 3, 4-disc set each one. And I think there's even, if you buy the ultimate box set, it comes with like another disc, like a 13th disc of even more extras. But yeah, just absolutely worth it if you're a fan of the movies.
Yeah, those were great. I really cheaped out and I bought the individuals, and I ended up borrowing the extended editions from like my girlfriend's brother-in-law.
Sure.
And I agree with you. There are four discs. I think I tackled each one. Took me about a week. I would watch the movie, the extras.
Yeah.
It was 7 days worth of easily. You know, after work, checking each of these things out. And then the next week, I'd start on the next one. It was, yeah, I agree. Plenty to see those.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Great sets.
Yeah, I actually own the expanded edition Lord of the Rings, and it is absolutely freaking amazing. So nothing but agreeance here.
Nice pick. Squeeze this over to my number four. And at number four, I have a movie that came out about a year ago on Blu-ray. It is the Diamond Edition of Beauty and the Beast.
Ooh.
I brought this one in for the fellas to see. And this one, it has the film on Beauty and the Beast on Blu-ray. They restored some of the color on there. And what I love about this one, again, is sort of the behind the scenes. And it has like a 3-hour documentary on everything from the animation, the story, all those crazy behind the scenes stories at Disney that were going on during the, there you go. Yeah. Behind the scenes, if you will, of what was going on actually at the studio during the production of the making of Beauty and the Beast.
It's interesting. And actually, this is one for the Jawbox, Elias. If I'm not mistaken, this was one of the first times they released a feature that had computer animation in it. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty darn sure.
Because it's during, I believe, the dance sequence. They make a big deal about the big dance sequence and how
you can tell when you watch it now.
Yeah, it's awesome. And the color in this movie, I was totally sold by just them talking about how much work they went into restoring the print and the surround sound.
That's awesome.
It's done in 7.1 DTS for your home theater lovers like myself. This thing will knock your socks off. I love this film.
Wow. That is cool, man.
There you go. That was my number four. Swings us into our threes, man.
It's definitely better than my Blu-ray of Cars 2. where are we?
Number three.
Number three. All right. So I would be completely remiss if I didn't have this trilogy on my list, the box set. And there's so many different versions, and we could argue all day. This could be an episode unto itself, just which version is the best. But I got to go with Star Wars. And I'm speaking of the original trilogy. We'll leave the prequels out for now.
You're talking original before they got effed with by Lucas?
Exactly.
Okay.
I'm not.
You're talking about the first time they came out in a box set form on DVD.
Well, I believe by the time they came out on DVD, he had already changed things.
Yeah. Yes. So they've never come out on DVD as the original theatrical
releases,
right?
No.
Yeah.
You can get them like on like knockoff bootleg websites.
Sure,
and stuff,
yeah.
In their original theatrical release on DVD, but you know what? Any box set of Star Wars, even with the changes made by Lucas, it's worth owning.
Yeah, I own it. Yeah, I've got it. It's totally worth it. Almost any film fan has to have that in their collection. And yeah, even, you know, despite the weird things that Lucas added, they're still worth watching. They're fantastic films.
Yeah, and you know, not to go off on a huge tangent, but I recently found out a cool order to watch the films in. Because my kid, Angry Birds Star Wars Edition came out.
Completely addicted to it.
Yeah, yeah, it's hastened his introduction to Star Wars. I was going to wait till he was like 7 or 8, but now I got to do it. So I reached out on Facebook and said, what order do I show these films to my kid in? And it turns out this is the way to do it, and it's called machete order. You show him the films in this order. You go, of course, A New Hope, and then Empire Strikes Back. Then you go to Episode 2, Episode 2, then Episode 3, so... whatever episode 2 is called.
Clone Wars,
Revenge of the Sith, and then wrap it all up with Return of the Jedi. You leave episode 1 completely out. it's not necessary. And if you go and Google machete order, it makes perfect sense this way. You get two of Anakin, two of Luke, two of Anakin, and then it wraps it all up with Return of the Jedi.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind.
Yes, get the box set. And you can throw... episode 1 right out the window.
Nice pick. You can't go wrong with Star Wars.
No.
Swings us over to the other Matt's number 3.
Okay, number 3. I kind of went a little off base here. For my number 3 DVD, I picked Fight Club.
We
all love that movie. It's a fantastic movie, but if you actually have the DVD, it's unbelievable. It's almost like playing a video game. There's hidden Easter eggs everywhere. There's all kinds of bizarre special features. They even do the whole like splicing, like pornography, like in the menu itself. Like everything about it is in the spirit of the film, like the anarchic spirit of Fight Club. It's just incredible. I think it's a 2-disc set, and it's just chock full of extras, you know, special features, deleted scenes, gag reels with like David Fincher and Ed Norton, like goofing around and doing all this great stuff, you know. And but just it's so fun to just play with these menus and find these little Easter eggs and these little things that they threw in. I love it. It's, I mean, we've all seen the movie a bunch of times, I'm sure, and I think most people like it. Maybe you don't like it, but the DVD is completely worth owning. I love it.
Great pick, great pick. Yeah. And David Fincher is one of those that really goes all out on his movies, it seems, on DVD.
Yeah.
Awesome. Nice pick. Nice pick. Swings us over to my number three. And at number three, I do have my first Criterion collection.
Very good. Nice.
I like that you actually brought the discs with you.
Yeah, and I didn't bring my number one because I thought I didn't want to get it damaged in any way. But this was the Royal Tenenbaums is my pick for number three. Of course, everybody knows here the Jawheads at home. I'm a huge Wes Anderson fan. He does awesome work on his DVDs, chock-full with extras, just like you say. And in this particular one, of course, you have the enhanced viewing of the director's commentary with Wes Anderson, but you also get a tour of the Tenenbaum's house, some of the drawings and murals that are on the wall. You also have interviews behind the scenes with Gene Hackman, Angelica Houston, Gwyneth Paltrow, wow. Bill Murray. There's outtakes on here. It's a two-disc set. I love this one.
I completely agree. I own it. It's in my library. It's in my collection. Everyone should have it. It's still maybe my favorite Wes Anderson film. I didn't like it much at first, but it just keeps getting better and better every time you watch it. You discover new things about it. You discover weird things in the background of the house. And of course, Criterion just went all out. I think they've done almost every Wes Anderson film, they're about to with
the Darjeeling
and Moonrise Kingdom. But Royal Tenenbaums is a must-have.
Yes, that is a great set right there, and also offering in 5.1 surround sound. love it right there. That was my number three. We swing it into our twos.
All right, yeah, we're getting into the big ones, right? So I think, this is my opinion, no DVD collection would be complete. And in fact, as soon as I bought my PlayStation 3, I got this one on Blu-ray, The Matrix. You take the blue pill or the red pill, Rye. You chase the white rabbit. There are some really interesting, you were talking about Easter eggs, Matt.
Sure.
There's some really cool Easter eggs on this Blu-ray. So that alone makes it very worth it. But the movie itself is just so stunning visually. This is, and we've talked about this before, I think it's been a while though. This was a landmark film, kind of set the bar for special effects going into the new era of technology and stuff. You have to have The Matrix. I think, even though it's got Keanu Reeves in it, I think it's worthy of Criterion, so maybe they should look at that. It's certainly better than Armageddon.
Oh, yeah, please, no doubt.
Of course.
Did they release like a crazy like 15-disc box set that came with like a statue or something like that?
I believe so, like, on DVD before it didn't come like to Blu-ray. Something ridiculous.
A crate with like a million different discs.
They needed some way to get everybody to buy that.
With the Animatrix packed in there, too.
Yeah, exactly. That was it, yeah.
They did. I think like right around the release of the third one on DVD, they came out with like a big box set with lots of extras.
I do like the first two. The third is kind of an incomprehensible mess, but the box set is still worth having just for the behind the scenes and all the wild special effects they did. I totally agree.
Really, it's really all about the first movie. If you watch the second movie, okay, but it's just going to lead you to disappointment, which is the third movie. I agree completely.
Nice pick, Matt. Nice pick.
Thanks.
The other Matt, what do we got sitting at two?
Okay, I touched briefly on Brazil earlier, but to me, the movie that is most infamous, I guess, for all the different versions is Blade Runner. And if you have the 5-disc ultimate collection, it comes in a briefcase.
Whoa.
Yes, it's amazing. It's like Decker's briefcase that he carries, and it's got like the original theatrical version, the director's cut that came out in like 1992, the international version, and then the final cut, you know, that Ridley Scott finally put together that he says, I'm not going to tinker with it anymore. So you've got literally 4 different versions of the film in this box set, and then not to mention another couple discs of just a bevy of amazing extras. Blade Runner is an incredible film. I don't know if you need all the different versions. It's interesting to see the one with the narration, you know, where with Harrison Ford's awkward overdub, you know, narration throughout that was in the theatrical release versus Ridley Scott's final cut. I don't know if you need the other versions in between. But it comes literally in a briefcase. It's hard to kind of store on your DVD wall, but it's an awesome-looking gift, and it's a fantastic set.
Oh, boy, I like it, because I have it on DVD. I think I have just Ridley Scott's version.
Okay.
on DVD.
The absolute final cut, the one that came out like
I'm not even positive
years.
Now. It was like he had like the director's cut, then the final cut. I can't remember which one I have now, but I might need to upgrade. I like that pick right there. And
that
everybody should have Blade Runner.
I agree. That's a good pick.
Nice pick. Swings this over to my number two, and at number two, I have a two-disc set. Boy, poor Tony Scott has passed away. I am speaking of True Romance. This is on DVD.
Nice. Really? This is your number two?
Number two. Yeah. I love the film, but it's also because of the two, I should say three commentary tracks. I've listened to two of them. One, you have Quentin Tarantino, who wrote the film. His commentary track, standalone. You also have Tony Scott, the directors, but then you also have Christian Slater and Patricia Arquette describing what was going on. And I love hearing back on something, a large
which
cast
is,
like this.
Which is the one you haven't listened to?
I have not listened to Tony Scott's.
Okay.
I've listened to Christian Slater and Arquette and then Quentin Tarantino's.
Interesting.
Yeah. And just hearing Tarantino's in a situation where he wrote the film but didn't direct it, and things that were different here and so forth were... It's just fascinating on its own. It's worth a spin just for that.
True Romance is one of my personal favorite films. Just a quick story here. I saw it in the theater when I was like 16 or something. And you mentioned James Gandolfini earlier in his great cameo in the brutal scene in the hotel. Yeah. I think about three or four people walked out of the theater during that scene. And I was sitting there in the theater and I see these people all leaving. I'm like, why are they leaving? It's like this crazy scene. And, you know, they didn't come back. They just walked out. They couldn't take it anymore. It's an intense movie, but, you know, that scene, I guess, was just too much for them. But I love it. It's a fantastic film.
Yeah. And a little bit more on the second disc, you have an alternative ending. And it also comes with optional director and writer commentary. So you hear like Quentin Tarantino talking about the different type of endings.
Did Clarence die in the alternative ending? Was that what happened? Or?
He does.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Really? That changes the movie completely.
Yeah. It does. It kind of ends on like a more of a bummer, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also Dennis Hopper, you know, passed away now, and Val Kilmer, Brad Pitt interviews. I mean,
the scene in this movie with Dennis Hopper when he gets whacked, and I don't think I'm giving anything away.
Christopher Walken.
One of the best.
I love
one
it.
Of the, one of the
this
best.
This one gets a spin in my house every time I've had a few cocktails.
Love it. Yep. Love it.
I love True Romance. It's up there in my top five.
That was my number
all
two.
All time? Like
all
top
time,
five?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, for sure.
It might crack my top 10. I don't know if I could put it in top five, but yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. I absolutely love it.
Swing us into our number ones. No crossovers yet. Matt, what do you got sitting there?
The movie I have watched probably more than any other movie. I think it tops a lot of people's lists for a lot of different genres.
Pig in the City.
How did you know? If you don't own this movie, there's probably something wrong with you. The Shawshank Redemption. I don't even really need to explain myself.
In
on
my
this
top
one, do
five
I?
All time.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably my favorite movie.
Sure. But TBS has almost ruined having the reason of owning it on DVD because they play it so much.
They do play it to death. And the DVD itself has not many extras on it, if I remember correctly.
The film alone is enough.
The film alone is enough, really. I almost don't want to know more. I don't think I would want to watch deleted scenes like from that movie.
They didn't delete any scenes because it was that good.
Everything was perfect.
Yeah.
Hey, we nailed it.
Pretty much. I mean, it's a great movie. It's worthy. I think it's worthy number one on anybody's list, on any list, period. So
Nice, Matt. Worthy number one. I'll give
Thank
it to you.
Thank you.
Swings us over to the other Matt. Can't wait to hear what he has number one.
I know.
The Criterion Completist.
My interest is peaked.
Mine is also kind of a movie you sometimes see at the top of a lot of lists, and... it is Apocalypse Now, the Redux version.
I own this. It's in my collection.
The complete dossier. It is maybe my second. It used to be my favorite movie of all time. It might be like two or three. It's still up there. But this version is actually looks not very exciting. It's in a cardboard sleeve, kind of, but it looks like Martin Sheen's dossier that
like
he has
dossier,
on
right.
Kurtz, you know, and it comes with... You know, in the movie, he's like sweating. There's sweat pouring off his nose, and there's like a wax button on it. And you see him pull the thread and like break the wax seal. The DVD itself comes with a wax seal on it. That's like this like piece of plastic, so you feel like you're opening up, and it's in the movie. So stylistically aside, it comes with both versions of the movie. You know, Coppola famously had to cut 49 minutes from it, and it adds it all in, and it reshuffles like the narrative, so you get more with the surfboard scenes, more with the Playboy bunnies, and then, of course, the famous French plantation scene. And there's even another scene with Marlon Brando at the end. But it's Both versions are great. People ask me which one I like better. I'm not entirely sure. I think I do like the original a little bit better, but it's worth having regardless. It's one of the best films ever made, and it comes in this amazing two-disc DVD set.
Awesome. Awesome yeah. pick. Very worthy number one. And speaking of number ones, as we get over to mine, this is this film is actually listed on a lot of number ones, period, just for movies. And I got this as a gift just recently. I'm speaking of the Citizen Kane 70th anniversary 3-disc Blu-ray.
Oh, you did not just go Citizen Kane.
Oh, yes.
Oh, he did.
And yeah. let me tell you Rose about this Bud. Set. Are you familiar with this set?
I've heard of it. I don't own it. It's on my list to go.
It is a 3-disc set. The packaging is beautiful. It comes with a booklet of different pictures during the making of, but it also comes with like miniature posters. It also comes with little copies of Orson Welles' receipts, little notes, scribbles wow. that he made, and they put all this in the set so that you
Did
have
a snow globe too.
Yeah, I wish it had that. Yeah. But it has all these like little features that when you open it up, gives you everything about like the making of. There's a commentary actually on there by Roger Ebert talking about the importance of the film. All kinds of memorabilia, Citizen Kane, and it's remastered.
Spoken by Roger Ebert, so this was obviously
before. And I tell you what,
it's probably worth it for that alone.
I didn't bring it because I just didn't want to damage it in transit. Sits very nicely on my collection on the top. It's a beautiful, beautiful set.
Can I make a confession right here and now?
It might get me kicked off.
Never seen it.
I've never seen Citizen Kane.
Wow.
Hey, wait. Elias, have you ever seen Citizen Kane? Be honest.
Yes, I actually have.
Oh,
yes.
You liar.
I swear.
You're so lying.
So those were our 15 favorite DVDs, Jawheads. If you have Twitter pulled up and we missed one of yours, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. Let us know what your favorite DVD is of all time. What we're going to do is take a quick break. We come back. We are playing trivia. Matt versus Matt. Matt Streets versus Matt K in Lord of the Rings actors movie trivia, plus a cinema war looking at recent prequels and who did it best. We'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a CinemaJaw movie fact. The 1996 film Twister is notable for being the first Hollywood feature film to be released on the DVD format and one of the last to be released on the now-defunct HD DVD format. And that is your CinemaJaw movie fact.
And we are back on CinemaJaw hanging out with Matt Streets, also known as the Criterion Completist. We are going to be playing trivia, Lord of the Rings movie trivia.
Nice.
But before that, we got to a segment here, Matt, that we call
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this, Jawheads. This is where me and Matt battle on a topic each week, and it's very important because whoever wins the Cinema War gets 20 seconds of jaw time to rant and rave on whatever they want. Our guest this week, Matt Streets, gets to play judge and jury and determine who won the Cinema War. And with The Hobbit coming out, Matt, it's basically a prequel of sorts
sure.
to The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
It got us thinking about recent prequels. Elias, tell the Jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Today's Cinema War topic is, which recent prequel is better, X-Men First Class or Rise of the Planet of the Apes? Matt, you'll be fighting for X-Men. Rye, you'll be fighting for Rise of the Apes. Let the Cinema War begin.
All right, here's the thing, Rye. Rise of the Planet of the Apes is an awesome movie. I will concede that point to you right away. But in no way is it stronger than X-Men First Class. The X-Men is just a way stronger franchise in pop culture and way less cheesy. But sticking to the film's First Class, the setting as the real reason behind the Cuban Missile Crisis was genius. Genius, Ryan, not just some smart monkey.
Hey, I'm not saying it wasn't genius. Both of these films were surprise hits, Matt. But Rise of the Apes had much more going against it, Matt. Who would have thought that the backstory of how the apes got their intelligence would possibly work out? Plus, it was hindered, Matt, by that crappy Tim Burton film that tried to reboot the series a few years ago. The cards were stacked against it.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape.
You used it before I could.
You know what Rise doesn't have? That line. You know what else it doesn't have? Kevin Bacon. I could rest my case right there, but you know what else it doesn't have? Michael Fassbender and James McAvoy doing a freaking awesome job portraying Magneto and Professor X as best friends. Seriously, the whole cast of XFC is top-notch. With the apes, you have digital effects and James Franco's acting ability, which might also be just a special effect.
Oh, come on, Matt. Rise of the Apes did everything a prequel should, had some nice nods to the earlier films, such as seeing the original astronauts leaving the Earth. I love that. Plus, at the same time, it made its claim for its own series.
X-Men First Class was directed by the masterful Matthew Vaughn, who's given us such gems as Layer Cake, Kick-Ass, and Harry Brown. Rise was directed by Rupert Wyatt, who's given us Rise of the Planet of the Apes. It's a great freshman entry, but he still has some work to do to convince me.
Matt, Andy Serkis' motion capture as the ape Caesar was spectacular in here. The idea that the apes were used in an experiment to cure Alzheimer's disease was brilliant, and the action scenes on the Golden Gate Bridge were just plain awesome. I loved Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
All right, the bottom line is this. First Class is the amazing story of how the X-Men and the Brotherhood were formed, set against the serious backdrop of World War II and the Cuban Missile Crisis. It takes a fantastic situation and grounds it in reality that almost makes it plausible. Rise tries to do all these things and almost gets there. As I said in my first point, Rise is a good movie, but XFC is superior in every way. Rye, go spank the monkey somewhere else.
Oh, come on, Matt. You know, the problem is with you is you just love movies where guys wear spandex, and that's you're just into these films. But let me tell you, Apes is an older, more prestigious franchise to try to make a prequel to as well. It won over older fans while bringing on new fans, and while old ape films were known for outstanding makeup, Matt, the new prequel is known for outstanding motion capture. So get your damn sticking hands off me, Matt, you damn dirty ape.
Beat you to it.
Yeah, I know. All right, so we are locking jaws here on Cinema War. We throw it to Matt Streets. What'd you think of the Cinema War?
You managed to get in the famous Heston quote in there twice. That was great. Despite Matt's admirable efforts at defending X-Men First Class, which is a good movie, I like it, I just didn't think that it worked as a prequel, and that's what we're talking about here, is best prequel, and it just seems like a separate movie unconnected to the rest of the X-Men movies. I'm going to award the winner to Ryan, Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Which is the better movie, though?
I think I liked Rise better, a little better than X-Men First Class.
I thought this one was in the bag.
It definitely works as a prequel, because it ties right in with the astronauts, like you mentioned. And it was like, great, like we know how the apes got their intelligence. We know how the planet gets wiped out. There's going to be this next movie that will literally tie it up into the original Planet of the Apes. And therefore, as a prequel, it works better than X-Men First Class.
Yes. It always feels great. Let me have a sip of beer before I rant and rave for my 20 seconds.
I thought with Matt's comic book background over here, I was a shoo-in today.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more picky sometimes than when it comes to the movies. I did like X-Men First Class, but I thought Rise was a better prequel and actually a better movie.
Wonderful. Well, I'm going to use my 20 seconds since we were talking about DVDs to tell Hollywood how much I can't stand the lame gag reels on DVDs. They're supposed to be hilarious, and they have all the potential to be, but constantly. It's not funny to see Katherine Heigl screw up her line 25 times. It's not a gag reel, guys. I want to see stuff like a door not opening when it's supposed to on set, or a boom mic hitting one of the actors. That's a gag reel. I want to laugh at that kind of stuff.
Well done, Rye. You still suck.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Matt. Before we get to trivia, really quick, we want to get to the Jawbox. Because we were supposed to do that right away when we come back from break. Elias, we threw a couple items into the Jawbox. What do you got for us?
Yeah, I thought you guys forgot about the Jawbox there. I dress it up nice to the listener at home. It has a Christmas bow on top, and there's a hole in back for me, you know, with the dick in the box thing there. Okay, so let's see what was in the box. When did Braveheart come out? Okay, that was May 24th, 1995.
95?
So right in there, yeah. So, yeah.
I said 95, I believe.
Yeah, I think we did.
Fresh off Cinco de Mayo there, ready to root for the Scots. All right. So, and then the second one was Beauty and the Beast, the first Disney computer animated film, or feature film with computer animation in it, and yes, it was.
Wow. See?
So there you go, Matt. You're very knowledgeable.
Very good.
Well done. Thank you, Elias.
Thank you.
Love that Jawbox.
Yeah, me too.
Real quick, DVD review. Speaking of Disney and Pixar, of Brave came out on Blu-ray recently. And let me tell you, Matt, I got to say, Pixar strikes out again here. The story is unoriginal and filled with dull and predictable characters. The whole movie just felt tiresome. The plot line of the mom turning into a bear was dim-witted. I expected more when it comes to Pixar. As good as the animation was, and I really did like it, I got to say, skip Brave. 1.5 Jaws for Ry the Movie Guy.
Yeah, I agree. Who did they make this movie for? I mean, was it certainly wasn't marketed toward little girls, and I think that's kind of the audience maybe for it, if it has an audience.
I haven't seen it, but most people I talked to actually liked it, and I thought it was supposed to be empowering for girls and young women.
That's definitely the message of the movie. Yes, okay. It is. Yeah. But, you know, did you see How to Train Your Dragon?
No, I missed that
and
one.
Me and Matt are a big fan of this one, actually. And,
yeah.
And
I've heard
really,
it's good, yeah.
It really felt like a sort of a ripoff of it, like they were going to go for this. You know, in this case, they're, you know, Scottish.
It
but
did.
It had that, like, medieval feel, and it just felt like, God, we just saw this with How to Train Your Dragon, but the storyline of the mom becoming a bear.
With the bears,
I hated it. I was like, when is this movie going to end? That's how I felt it. I never feel that about a Pixar.
It
went off the tracks for me.
It went off the tracks for me, too.
I'd rather watch the animated Robin Hood. I love that.
Oh, I love that one also.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like one of my favorite movies when
I was a kid. Gotta get that on Blu-ray.
Me too.
<Yeah.
laughs> Me too, dude. I haven't seen it in way too long.
Yeah. Nice pick. Hey, Jawheads, a new segment here to determine who is going to go first in Lord of the Rings actors movie trivia. We decided to throw a segment in. Think Family Feud. We're calling it Cinema Feud. Works like that. We throw a question to our contestants, and you guys got to guess the top answers. What we did is we went out and we pulled over 25 Jawheads. The top three answers are on the board. We are going to throw this to Matt Streets first. He's our guest.
Okay.
All right. Top three answers are on the board. Matt, name a character in The Lord of the Rings.
Legolas.
Matt Streets has Legolas.
I don't, that is not.
Hold on. Let me go. We go to the board. Survey says. Did not even make the top three.
Oh.
Wow. We throw it over to Matt K. You got a chance for the board if you can get one here.
Frodo.
Matt K. goes with Frodo. Survey says.
It's one of the top three.
Number two, Frodo. Ooh, came nice. In with 23% of the vote was okay. Frodo. You guys missed too, Matt. You got control of the board on trivia. Number three was
Aragorn.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Number one was
Gandalf.
Oh, boy. There you go.
Was that Gandalf the Grey or the White?
Yes, Gandalf the Grey.
You should have got real specific there.
So it was Gandalf, Frodo, and Aragorn. No love for Legolas.
I know. I thought they liked the pointy ears. Maybe I was wrong.
Matt, you got Frodo, so you get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt Streets go first. We are playing Lord of the Rings actors movie trivia.
I'll go first.
Now, remember, there are steals, and if you get stuck on one, you get one trip to the ER. Our producer, Elias Rodriguez, will help you out with a clue. Question number one, over to Matt K. Sean Astin appeared in the 1985 classic, The Goonies. What was his character's name?
Mikey.
1-0, Matt K. Question number two, over to Matt Streets. Right after Rings, Viggo Mortensen appeared in this film concerning a horse race across the Arabian Desert.
Ooh.
You do have one ER if you want to use it early.
God, did not see this one, but I know exactly what it is. I didn't want to go to the ER this early, but I might have to here. I'm going to visit the ER here.
Wow, trip to the ER. Elias, what was the name of the Viggo Mortensen movie where he raced across the Arabian Desert?
Wow, he's using a quick here. All right, hope your day job pays their Obamacare. Here we go. And your clue is starts with an H and ends with an O.
Oh, God.
He is thinking.
It's
on the tip of his tongue. You can see it.
Ooh. I don't know if I'm going to be able to dig this one up. It's like the Horatio something.
I had to ask him. We go over to Matt. You got a chance for a steal.
Is it Hildago?
Oh, that was it.
Wow. 2-0, Matt K. Hildago.
I wanted the Goonies question. Damn it.
All right. All right, question number three is over to Matt Cave's winning 2-0. This is odd, I tell you. This Lord of the Rings actress appeared in the 2008 Edward Norton version of the Hulk.
That would be... Say that again?
This Lord of the Rings actress appeared in the 2008 Edward Norton version of the Hulk.
Lord of the Rings, I mean... And the Hulk? Liv Tyler? It's... Oh, yeah. I was getting mixed up with Jennifer Connelly. Ooh. She was in the Ang Lee version.
I was thinking Jennifer Connelly.
That threw me off.
Yes. It is 3-0. Matt Kay, we need a big comeback here, Matt Streets. Question number four is over to him. Before he was Frodo, Elijah Wood starred in this Comet movie that also starred Robert Duvall and Tia Leone.
Did you say Comet?
Comet. Robert Duvall, Tia Leone, and Elijah Wood were in it.
Deep Impact?
He is on the board. It is 3-1. We throw question number five over to Matt Kay. This Lord of the Rings actor appeared in all of the following: Ned Kelly, Troy, Heaven, and The Good Doctor.
That would be Hugo Weaving.
Ooh. We got a chance for a steal. He opened it up here. Yeah. This Lord of the Rings actor, to Matt Streets, appeared in all of the following: Ned Kelly, Troy, Heaven, and The Good Doctor.
I think it's, I think it's the guy who plays Legolas, and I'm totally blanking on his name right now.
Oh, boy. Wish he didn't use that ER.
Yeah. And Heaven was that weird, sleazy movie that I didn't see. I'm gonna have to blank, man. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Elias, what was the clue on that one? If he didn't waste his ER there, I bet you he would have got it with this clue.
The clue was Florida City.
Florida City? Miami.
Where's Disneyland?
Miami or...
Orlando.
Yes.
Yeah, what's his face?
Orlando Bloom, we
Orlando
were looking
Orlando Bloom.
For.
It was Legolas. Boy. Do I get like a half point for guessing that it was Legolas?
No points rewarded. It's still 3-1, Matt K. This question, though, is over to... Matt Streets. This Lord of the Rings actor has become the ultimate villain, playing Red Skull, Agent Smith, and voicing Megatron.
That's Hugo Weaving.
3-2. Over to Matt K, however. Ian McKellen played Sir Lee Teabing in this Tom Hanks Audrey Tattoo film. Played Sir Lee Teabing in this Tom Hanks Audrey Tattoo film. You do have a trip to the ER left.
Yeah, I think I know what it is, but I can't come up with a title, so I need to go to the ER.
We throw it over to the doctor in-house, Elias Rodriguez. Do you got a clue for Matt there?
All right, Matt. Your clue is The Last Supper.
Okay, thank you. That would be the Da Vinci Code.
Oh, boy. I tell you, 4-1, Matt. 4-2, Matt. And the last question of the game. So Matt K does have a win. Ooh. But save face four here for yourself, Matt Streets. This Lord of the Rings actor has appeared in more movies than any other Lord of the Rings actor, playing Dracula many times.
Ian McKellen? Oh.
Matt, you got a chance for a steal.
Christopher Lee.
Yeah, duh.
Absolutely, Christopher Lee. Matt wins this one. Wow.
Ooh.
5-2. Matt K with a big win here.
Thank you.
Yeah. How about a handshake?
This was well done. Yeah. I froze at a couple key moments, but gracious in defeat. You were great.
we do have a jawbreaker, we call it, in case it came down to a tie. So we throw this over to Matt Streets. Better career since Lord of the Rings, Orlando Bloom or Elijah Wood?
Ooh, I would say neither. What has Elijah Wood been in? Has he been in much since
Sin City?
Was he in Sin City? With the yellow bastard or Kevin? He was Kevin. I guess I'll go Elijah Wood.
Absolutely incorrect. It's Orlando Bloom. the real jawbreaker was this: age of Ian McKellen, closest to Matt K. What would you put him at? Gandalf the Grey. How old is he?
Yeah, no, he's got to be in his 70s. I would say like 72.
Elias, can you lock him in at 72? Matt Streets, what would you say?
First number that popped in my head was 74.
This is almost uncanny. He's 73.
Oh my! We split the difference exactly.
Wow.
We're going to call that a tie.
Okay. Well, it's bringing us to the end of a great jaw here. We got to thank Matt Streets and the Criterion Completist. This was a blast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. This was awesome. I could talk about movies forever. And yeah, I've had a lot of fun here tonight.
If they want to catch your reviews of the Criterion Collection, where's the best place for jawheads to find it online?
Is it keepingitreal.com. That's keeping-it-real.com.
And it's R-E-E-L.
Yes, like a film reel.
Absolutely. Definitely check out his reviews. And also David Follies, who does great work, long reviews for...
David's a great guy. He does reviews every week, and he also does like weekly DVD release like articles. So if you want to know like what came out that week on DVD and Blu-ray, every week he's got it up there.
It's a great site in general, so yeah. Definitely check it out.
It is. We also want to thank the New 400 Theaters.
Yeah,
check out
sure.
What's playing at the New 400 at their website, thenew400.com.
Yeah, we got to thank our producer or engineer,
Elias Rodriguez. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys. And I want to let everybody know that I'm going to take photos of the awesome DVD box sets that the guys brought in. So hopefully you can see those on the website.
Yeah, I'll post them in there. Yeah, for sure.
Cool.
So until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.
Cheers.